Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist to billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
All right. Hitting it now. So hello, everyone, and welcome back to Elevating Beyond with a two-word mission statement: change lives. And we're getting ready for an awesome show today. First of all, I have sitting with me Glenn Withrow, and I'll explain to you in a minute, his wife, his lovely wife, Hallie Todd, is going to be jumping on as well. And we connected. We're always honored to have hundreds of you submitting for guest inquiries, but something about, I think it was your PR, I forget her name. She was a lovely lady who reached out about the trailer of the movie that you guys have coming out, The Last Champion. And my assistant, it just got missed in the cracks, and I happened to catch it like late one night and watch the trailer. And I'm like, whoa, like that movie looks awesome. And I personally reached out and was like, hey, let's see about getting them on, because I really liked what it stood for. And just so everyone knows, just real quickly, and we'll be talking about this during the interview, but The Last Champion, as we're recording this, it actually premieres tomorrow, December 8th on iTunes, available to purchase. And I have Glenn with me, who co-produced it with his wife and his daughter, Haley Todd and Ivy Withrow. His wife also stars in the movie along with, and I'm probably going to butcher your last name, sorry, Cole. Is it Cole Hauser?
Hauser. Cole Hauser.
I knew it.
Cole Hauser, yeah.
Well,
and Hallie, like Hallie.
I said that perfectly. And I know there's a whole other, like, from watching the movie that you guys sent to me, the early release, and I'm gonna save that for the interview. So many other amazing actors throughout it all. I'm not going through the whole list, but there were so many, such great talent. So first and foremost, Glenn, welcome. How are you doing, my good man?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So Glenn, from us talking a little bit last week, It was really interesting just kind of hearing some of your whole backstory of how from like 20 plus years you've been doing this, starting out with acting and then stop acting, went into film school in your 30s. And I just think it's kind of cool to sort of share that story behind the story, maybe starting with when you were in a movie. And I love how you just threw that out there. You're like, oh, by the way, I was in The Outsiders, if you've ever heard of that movie. And I looked up who you were as one of the greasers. I was going to have a picture of it to try to show it on screen, but there was a lot of clips with you in that. What was the character's name again in The Outsiders?
Tim Shepard.
Tim Shepard, that's right.
Tim Shepard was sort of the outsider to The Outsiders. But it was a wonderful part. And you know, once a greaser, always a greaser. Greasers forever.
I love it. So from going from there, Glenn, and acting in movies and having that, like, I don't know if that was what I was asking this before, if that was your main dream at that time, like, I want to make it as an actor. Like, what was that like to where you sort of pivoted and transitioned in your 30s to, I'm going to go back to film school, I'm maybe going to lay off acting and start really getting into the directing, producing, and writing. And now you're freaking, you and your whole family are doing all of it.
Yeah. Well, that was because of how Francis influenced me. Francis always worked with his family. And, you know, I got to work with him four or five times. And I saw how he worked with his family and that they were all involved and all inclusive. And I said, you know, one day that's what I want to do. So, but I, you know, starting off as an actor is sort of your easiest way in. It's not really easy, but it a lot of people start off and then they move into writing and so on and so forth. And it was like that for me. I had worked a lot younger, but it was just never, I loved it, but it was just never satisfying enough. So I started writing. And when I started doing that, my first script was optioned by Disney. And I said, okay, well, you know, maybe we've, you know, I got something here. We can keep pushing forward. And then by the time I hit my late 30s, I said, I don't know if I want to just be the paint anymore. I think I want to be the painter and throw all the colors up there and leave that type of work behind. So it was a lot of hard work. Went back to school, film school, because I'd already worked with Francis. So I was, and being an actor, I was already very comfortable working with actors. But I wanted to know the technical side of it. And I come from a background in photography, so I understood lenses, but I still wanted to see how you really put all of it together from storyboarding and the whole process.
And just real quick, Glenn, so Francis, to everyone listening, can you just, for a lot of people that don't know, so Francis, he produced, can you just explain who Francis was? Everyone?
Yeah, Francis Coppola. You know, the master, the Godfather, Apocalypse Now.
I think I've heard of those movies.
But I only have to say those two, we all know.
Right.
Just an incredible person to work with, an incredible person to study. And so that, yeah, that was the big motivation behind it. You know, I really said, I'm going to copy this guy. He's one of the best. And Francis always said, you know, take from the best, but make it your own. Mm. And it's kind of what we did with The Last Champion, actually. But he was a great influence. And what I did with Hallie is that we formed we ran a studio that we had for years in Burbank. It was a sort of an insert stage and photography. I would rent it out, and we'd rent it out for casting sessions, and was able to keep, that's what helped really stay away from it. Now, my wife, I was fortunate. She's done 5 series. She was able to, that's why I was really able to afford stepping back, to be honest with you, and pursue that.
That's cool. So, and one of those being, we'll be having Howie jump on here in a couple minutes. Yeah. Like the Lizzie McGuire series on Disney Channel, and that ran, how many years did that run for?
I don't know how many years, because they did them back to back to back. Mm. May have done, she'll answer that, 100 episodes. I don't know.
Okay.
I know that they're getting ready. They're in talks right now to revamp it and do it again.
Okay.
Order. So,
that's awesome.
There.
So, and that's kind of when you went into it. So was the first full movie that you actually wrote, produced, and directed The Mooring, which you did with your daughter, Ivy. And if I read that correctly, was she only in 10th grade or was she a sophomore in college?
10th grade, high school.
Wow.
10th grade. You know, so it revolved around girls that were like similar in age, but we had to kill 9 girls in that movie.
I saw the trailer for it.
But we had to keep it, I didn't want it gratuitous. I didn't want just blood and guts everywhere, because I'm dealing with girls that were, you know, underage and an audience. So we tried to make it as creative as we could without that you'd sort of indicate the violence or the death. And I think that's scarier anyway.
Right. It is. It brings in a different level of kind of like that suspense and the wondering. And yeah, I could tell even just by the trailer how it was shot. It looked like it was shot kind of differently. And I'm going to be checking it out for sure. But I thought that was so cool that she was only a sophomore in high school and already co-writing this first film with you. And so...
It's a family business.
Yeah, I love it. And that's where when I have your wife jump on in a minute, I'm going to ask both of you some more things about the good and the bad and times where you probably want to choke each other. But from doing the first movie, did you, like, what would you say some of the biggest kind of takeaways as a whole were that you, I mean, really, at least in my experience from having different businesses and stuff, is kind of experience is the best teacher, and you really kind of learn more and more by doing it. You have to go through terrible on the way to becoming great. And I'm not saying that it was terrible, but what would you say some of the things were that you really learned that when you guys sat down and did The Last Champion, you're like, oh, we're going to do this like kind of ahead of time differently?
Well, I learned that I never want to shoot at night on the water in a houseboat. I don't want to do that. I think what we learned was perseverance for
good word.
This film. I think also I learned that, which we're applying this time, is that we wanted more control of the product and the end product, and not have it turned over to someone else and let them make the decisions on marketing and to really get the type of story we wanted out there and not, you know, what a studio or what another production company would want. That's what we took away and said, we can do this ourselves. Let's raise the money. Let's raise the marketing money and let's get it out there ourselves. Let's cut out a lot of the middle guys.
That's right. So the first one, or The Mooring, you and your daughter Ivy co-wrote together and you directed, but you had that was taken on by another film company, as to where The Last Champion, it's 100% you guys literally from the ground up, right?
Right. Yeah. And it's really rewarding this way. And, you know, and Hallie was, you know, the other writer on that, on The Mooring. And we just found out also was that we could, you know, we could work together and argue through problems. And said, if we're going to do this, if we're going to really do this and be the auteur, then let's do it. Let's do it with The Last Champion. And everybody rallied around us with that. And it just, things are happening in a very wonderful way now.
Yeah. And if Hallie's ready, can she jump on right next to you? Because I have some, I want to wait till she's here from watching. Yep.
Over here.
Hey, Hallie.
Hello, how are you,
Mark? This is Hallie, Mark.
Nice to meet you. I'm doing great. I have to say, it's funny, we've been honored to have so many different guests over the years, whether it's been Olympic athletes or NFL players, New York Times bestselling authors, just all kinds of awesome people. And my super awesome administrative assistant was really excited about you. She's like, I guess she grew up watching the Lizzie McGuire show, and now she's in her late 20s. But she's like, oh my gosh, the 13-year-old me's mind would be blown right now. If I thought that was great. I had to tell you that. But so, Hallie, you co-wrote this, obviously, and produced it with your husband and daughter, and also starred in the movie. And I had a chance to watch the screening of it that you guys sent to me last week. And I had planned to watch it in two parts because I have so many things going on. I'm like, all right, I'll do one half this night. I stayed up till 2 a.m. watching it. It was really good. Like it hit all, had me tearing up. It had me like pumping my fist in moments. It was really good. It was awesome. So
I'm glad you watched it in one sitting, because I feel like the ending is, I think it's better in one sitting, this movie.
Right. I couldn't stop watching it. I'm like, I have to keep seeing what happens. But so when you're writing it, did you already have your role in mind as you were writing that, that was something I was curious about when I was watching the movie.
Yeah. So when we were figuring out the story and who was going to be part of the community and in that, you know, city of Garfield, who the players were going to be, so to speak, we knew that Michael Miller would have a mother that was going to be like his prime obstacle, separating him from like his dreams and goals. And we kind of knew basically how she was going to function to the story. And we decided that I would play that part. And then as we wrote it, we knew that that was going to be the character I played.
Okay.
I didn't have to compete against anybody for the part.
Well, and just everyone listening and when everyone's going to be watching this too, am I saying you, is it Hallie or Haley?
It's Hallie, Sally.
Like Hallie. Hallie. Okay. I'm the king of butchering. If I ever have a guest on and say their name correctly, then people will be like, what's going on, Mark? What's wrong with you? Because we're used to you messing up.
Oh, that's okay. I'm so used to having my name mispronounced that it's like, I just correct people now. I didn't when I was younger, but now I can.
When you were, for everyone watching and listening to, you were playing the lead character. Well, one of the lead character, I guess he would be the lead wrestler. And his mom and like struggling with alcoholism and a lot of other different things going on there when you were kind of glazing over like the hardships in his life. So yeah. And I was looking at that because at first when it came on too, I was looking at an old picture from when you were the mom on Lizzie McGuire. And I was like, wait, which one? I'm like, whoa. So yeah, you did great. Like I didn't even recognize you in it at first.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm not a film critic. I'm just speaking for, yeah, it was awesome. So
I recognize that. Yeah, sorry.
No.
I'm kidding.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah. All right.
I have something that I have to, so I talked to, Paul Bradley, who reached out. Yeah, he was also, he has worked with Dan Gable and mentioned being a lot of working on the set and the wrestling and stuff. And something he told me that was really cool about Cole was, and actually all of you, was how important it was to all of you that he said you would be asking after the different shots, like, did that look, was that wrestling move legit? Like, did it really, you know, how do you feel about that? And he thought, he just wanted me to personally tell you the fact that all of you cared enough about it and weren't just trying to make it, that doesn't matter as long as we got the shot right and the special effects. And Cole would be like, did I do that move the way that it seems real? And he thought, he really appreciated that.
Yeah, that was really important. That was like, because I was a wrestler. So it was really important that, and we're doing it in front of Dan Gable. So it was really important that we got every bit of it right and to keep it authentic. And so I had a lot of eyes on it. We'd go back and say, okay, we feel good about that. And I mean, they rehearsed it for, you know, almost a couple months, all the moves, and with Paul and Joel Shear, who really kind of choreographed everything.
Okay.
So, but yeah, that definitely very important. We got that right. And Dan, by the way, is getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom today.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Congratulations, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing.
And he has a spot. He's has a part where he's one of the announcers, right? In the
plays himself.
Yeah, Joel Shear gave me his number, and you know, he'd spoken to Dan. Said, yeah, Dan said, let him. You know, he can reach out to me. So you got to remember, he's like my idol.
Yeah,
my hero in high school. So now I've got his number, and I'm calling him, and I basically just. I had to close him. I had to close it and go, please be in this film. So, but he's tough. Dan is like, really, he's the real deal. So he read the script, read it a couple of times, handed it off to his wife to do it. And he goes, yeah, I'll do it. I'll be in it. So when I got him,
that's awesome.
Then we got Randy Lewis, another Olympian. And then we got Jason Bryant, who's the Olympic announcer. So it all came together in such a beautiful way and gave so much credibility to this film and to this sport, which I don't think for me has ever been shot the way that I wanted it to be shot and shown. So.
Yeah, no, it was great. And also there's something else that Paul told me to ask you, and I'm definitely not mentioning any names, won't even know the name, but he said, how you guys went and reshot one of the scenes, and I'm not going to give any spoiler alerts, but one of the bigger wrestling scenes towards the end of the movie. And at one point there was a smaller audience, and then you guys redid it with a much bigger audience. And he said one of the extras was like pretty belligerent. You guys actually had to toss him off there. Are we allowed to mention that?
I know what he's talking about. He's probably talking, well, we reshot the ending.
Yeah.
Of the film. And because it wasn't, a lot of things were going on. It had a massive snowstorm. We lost our crowd coming. And it was never really covered the way I wanted to cover it because of time restraints. So, and then at the end, I think he's talking about this girl who jumped out of the stands, and she was like the first one there, almost in Cole's arms. And it's like
in Washington.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So we go, okay, we can't have that. So, but when we went back, we shot it a year later in Texas, and we were able to really do it right. We had 7 cameras, plus we had an overview camera. So I'm sure that's what he's talking about.
Yeah. He was cracking up about it. So I don't know. That must be it. So with the three of you doing a movie together, both of you and your daughter, you were mentioning before how you've kind of, and your second one that you all wrote together. How do you work out some of those biggest, I'm just really curious, like when you are arguing over something, like who's more of the dominating personality in the family?
Well,
I wonder what Ivy would be saying.
I listen.
He does listen. And sometimes we'll be batting around ideas and he's very instinctual. So, a lot of the time he'll make a decision in that moment, whether, he likes it or doesn't like it, but a lot of time he'll say, no. And then I have to kind of like, oh yeah, but it's a really good idea. So I have to like, or Ivy will, you know, go, yeah, but think about blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, all of a sudden he'll go, you know what? You're right. So we just have to break through that instinctive reaction. But I think one of the hardest things, but it's also, I mean, I love a good puzzle. Like I love the editing process because it's really a puzzle. How do you make this as dynamic as possible? And I love the puzzle of writing challenges. How do we get this person to get to this reaction and have it be an organic path to get there and not just a really artificial sort of forced moment. And so I just love that process. I think that's my favorite part of the whole thing. And in the room, there's a puzzle in just trying to get everybody to give everybody else their voice. And we all get very passionate. So we're all like, no, that's bad. No, he's got to do this or she's got to do that or whatever. But we work it out. I mean, we have the best time and we laugh our butts off and we can't wait to do it again. So the arguments, it's more like just family stuff. You know what I mean? You wouldn't have those arguments working with just a straight partner, writing partner. It's because all the family stuff is, you know, feeding into the moment.
Right.
So it's like normal family dynamic plus the creative process. So it's just super intense. But I mean, but it's also just really special. And I keep having to go, you know, people go, God, that's amazing. You do this together. And I'm like, yeah, you know,
it really is
cool. Yeah. I have to kind of remember that this is not a normal thing. Families don't do this and we do it. And it's really Glenn driving. I mean, he's pushing that boulder up the mountain. Like he's carrying more burden as a director, obviously, but even as the chief producer, he definitely is like on another level of participation insanity than I am.
Right. The whole
my business, input is more creative and not logistical or not like business, you know?
Right. Okay. That makes it, what did you guys, and did you ever write, were you always all together when you wrote, or would you be like your daughter, I think was in law school for some of it. Would it be like, you do this part while you're here, or were you always together?
We go in and out of those stages. We'll say, can you take this? I'll take this. Or Hallie will write, or Ivy will write, then I'll look at it, then I'll give notes, and eventually, you know, it makes it to the final page.
Yeah, like we'll take our individual efforts and then put them together and kind of tear them down and rebuild them. You know, sometimes something would not get changed, but we always, I mean, I can't look at the movie and think, oh, I wrote that, he wrote that, she wrote that. I can't, because it was such a collaborative effort by the time it was finished, except for any of the wrestling stuff and the fight scene. I think I don't even know how to write that kind of stuff, you know?
But I do try to take credit for as much as I can on the writing.
Every line and stuff that gets quoted. And
that we argue about that. I go,
I wrote that. No,
you did not write that.
I wrote that. I love it.
I remember when I wrote
that. Yeah, I remember when I wrote it. So I think you're wrong, but
yeah.
Then Ivy's like, no, it was me.
Well, she's not here today. So,
full credit.
Yeah. There was one, there was one scene in the church. And again, I don't want to give anything away, but I really liked like how it was written. And I just remember there was one part he was kind of talking about forgiveness, and the pastor was, after he had the discussion with him, he's like, people really tend to overcomplicate this whole thing much more than it needs to be. He's like, you confessed it and you give it to God and you can move on. And it was like, it could seem like a simple, but it was just like a simple truth that even kind of hit me. I was like, yeah, I guess we do kind of like, we really do overcomplicate that. Okay. Yeah. Now who wrote that?
You mean when he says, when God forgives, period, that line, your son, right. I mean, it says it all, you know, just right.
Yeah. And he's saying that when the pastor says people make this so complicated.
Right.
I think one of the things that was important to all of us was that, because this movie is about a lot of things, and the surrendering and giving it to God is a definite part of the movie, but it's not the whole movie.
Sure.
And we wanted to give that message to people who may be resistant to that message. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And the path of somebody walking through that process, I don't see it very often in a movie where I believe it and where I feel like it's not just so wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, so perfect. You know, like I leave that scene not knowing if John really gets it. You know what I mean? He's got, something's happened to him.
Right. It's like a process. Like,
oh, I'm saved. Or, oh, that was, you know, that was a perfect bow on that package. I like that it's still a process. It's still maybe working on him.
And you, that's so well said. I mean, that's really how it works in real life too, because there are other films where it can just over deliver too much on like, hallelujah, I've seen the light. And the next day it's like all butterflies and roses and sunshine. And it's like, no, you're still in the middle of a my own personal story from being in trouble and a lot of stuff in my younger years and even in jail at age 17, for me, it was a process. And I talk about, it was like, it was a long, like it's a lifelong really transformation, but that whatever people believe, but like the giving it to God part and kind of like letting it go is such a good ongoing lesson to that scene just again, like kicked me in the butt, like, dude, Mark, like you can give that to God and, you know, let that weight go off of you that so many people right now are weighed down by so much, you know, going on with COVID.
Time for this film, because there's so much diversity and so much, you know, people just hating each other because of the political landscape. And then you've got COVID, and I think there's a lot of despair and, you know, and people, you know, businesses closing, there's real stuff going on. And
right.
Our, you know, and I think this film can really help if it can take people out of their discomfort where they're in their pain for a couple hours, if they can watch it, they go, okay, well, there's hope out there. There's, you know what I mean?
So right.
I'm really happy about that, that I think we created something that for the times right now is something that could work. So that's really exciting.
I was thinking when we were putting it together, I mean, we were talking about how it would be remarkable if this simple message could resonate with people who aren't, who are really needing it, but who don't like to be presented with it.
Like preach that too much or something.
What did you say?
Oh, do you mean like where people kind of don't want something forced down their, like,
yeah.
Like you made it like real, no, it was right. Real.
I know when someone's forcing something on me, I don't lean in. I pull back, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter if it's somebody going, oh, you're going to love this movie. I'm like, yeah, I will be the judge of it. You know what I mean? It's like, I like to take my time and it's so personal, but having that wish that a lot of people would get that message of hope. And then all of a sudden, and feeling like that could happen, but then all of a sudden this movie just happens to be landing at a time when people need it so badly and
right.
So much division, and that there is such a message of community and forgiveness and love and hope that I'm hoping that people can feel a healing from it. Not, I mean, beyond 2 hours in a movie theater.
In a very authentic way.
In a room.
In a really authentic way.
That's a great word I would personally use to describe that movie. Is authentic. And I have so many things going on all the time with my family. We have 5 kids. I have a whole other company for individuals with developmental disabilities. So I don't have a lot of time to even know who's what and what's going on where. So I was like research, like you mentioned Cole on Yellowstone, and I'm like, yeah. And I honestly didn't even have a clue what that was. And I did some research and I was checking some of those out over the weekend. And now I'm actually hooked on that whole series.
It's really,
really well, man. It's so, but then I was thinking of him as like the lead in this movie and how well that character, like that authenticity that you were mentioning, and how he just brings that in just in such, like, I don't know how to describe it. His presence is like, it's subtle, but it's like, you
Gary
can just
Cooper.
Feel. Yeah.
He goes deep.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's effortless with Cole. He's phenomenal. And
he's just very present, man. He's like right there in the moment. Yeah. It was wonderful to get him. And when he came in and we had a meeting scheduled to meet each other, he was interested. And so he wanted to sort of suss me out. And I didn't know a lot about Cole when he came in. But within 5 minutes, I go, this guy is John Wright, because I didn't know who was going to play John Wright. We had this idea. But it was 5 minutes in, it was like, oh, this is the guy. This is John Wright. And it was like, and once that came together, everything else started coming together.
Yeah, because you couldn't nail any of the other characters unless you had him, because you didn't want to go too old with the boys, that there had to be enough of a differentiate. You couldn't cast Frank, the coach, because, you know what I mean? Everybody had to be believable in their generation. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
He couldn't look like he was related to the kids in case there was a result. You know, you just couldn't put anything together until he was set. So it was a huge relief having him and being able to put all the other pieces of the pie together.
Everyone did great. I mean, the kids that were in it, I thought did I was just stuck. I was caught in the movie. I wasn't even thinking about when I was watching it. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm getting ready to have all of you on my show next week. And like, I was just in the moment in the movie, which is a good thing. Yeah, it really was. And that, the young man that played, he would have played your son in the movie.
Sean Scully.
Thank you. Paul told me he worked really, really hard also beyond the wrestling and it like, and everyone else, but he said he really got into it. And he said he respected that.
He had the least amount of a wrestling background.
Yeah. Casey Moss, the antagonist, you know, his foe, and Michael Madden, the guy who, you know, sort of crosses over, they all worked incredibly hard.
That's what he said.
They wanted it. They wanted to make it authentic. And
Joey,
yeah. They really wanted to get it right. It was important to them. So I was happy with that.
And they were excited.
We saw a lot of guys for those roles. Man.
Yeah.
Saw a lot of
lot of really fine actors, but mm-hmm. that came down to them. And they were pretty, I think, pressured to be good because they knew Dan Gable was going to be in the movie too.
Yeah, no, for real. I mean, when I was talking with Paul and stuff about Dan, he was like, you don't mess around with that guy. He's the real deal.
No, you don't, man. He's like the real deal. I mean, he's getting the Medal of Freedom. You know, he's an incredible human being. And there's a story, and I actually related it to Dan, that we were shooting, and this one particular scene, the one where they're coming out of the locker room, and if you remember, walking up onto the final match, I really wanted this. It was a long shot. It starts in the locker room, goes all the way to the match, up to the wrestling mats. And the guy operating the camera just wasn't happening. So we did 16 takes, okay, to get it the right way. And I think Dan actually liked that because it's like, because he's one of those guys, work, right? So I was excited. I said, Dan, because he's in the shot, and he didn't get to see the shot. And I brought him over and I said, what do you think? And he goes, it's an A. He goes, but you want an A plus, right?
And I went, love it.
What? we did it again. I did it again. I went and said, yeah, I do. And that was like, I've never, you know, it would have been a fantasy to have Dan Gable as a coach. And I was always envious of everybody, these guys that were coached by him. And that was my moment to say I was coached by Gable. You know, you want an A plus. And I go, yeah, let's make it an A plus. So,
you know, what I love, like, always the story behind the story. And it's cool to see how you like, it's just, life is amazing in itself. Like I always say, God is orchestrating, and you never know how the dots are going to connect later on. But like you said, in your earlier years, where you wanted to probably do wrestling even at another level, I believe you were competing even for state, and you only could have dreamed of having someone like Dan for a coach. And it's really cool that all these years later, I mean, you know, that if someone would have told you as that kid, well, don't worry. Like if the wrestling thing doesn't work out later on, your wife and daughter will all be making a movie together, and he's going to be in it and coaching and helping give you notes.
Yeah. That was pretty spectacular. That would have been a whole other trajectory had he'd been the coach, but, you're right. I got this moment with him, and, that was pretty special. I'm glad I sort of own that story now and can, share it with people, because that's the type of guy he is. he is like, yeah, it's an A, but you want an A plus. And he works, and he, that's who he is. That's what he's exhibited his whole life, as working to that perfection, you know, Munich games, everything. I mean, that was Dan.
And in the coaching.
In the coaching, 15, you know, titles as an NCAA coach. He's the most winningest, you know, coach, football, basketball, anything. He's like the guy. Yeah. So for me to also support and bring him into the light and again, to help him, you know, to remind people, hey, this is who this guy was. And we're all here and we're all doing these moves based on Gable. He's the one, you know, there's actual moves, the Gable lock, and it's so it was wonderful. It was
really wow. That and speaking of the A plus part, so how did it work for you as being the actress? Is it, am I supposed to say actor, actress? I don't know
either way.
Okay. But from acting in the film and then also having your husband directing, were there moments there where you were like, hey, that's not an A plus, and we're like, we're not at home and I can't cuss you out right now in front of everyone. But
you have to answer that.
It's pretty easy. I mean, I let all actors just bring what their gifts to the table. And I say before, I just photograph them. And if something's getting a little skewed a certain way, I'll try to bring them back to the overall vision of how I'm seeing it. But, you know, you've got everybody with their vision of how they see themselves in the film. So with Hallie, it's easy. I actually really don't direct her unless it's something like maybe a little bit more energy or bring it down a little bit here. Other than that, I totally believe in her choices and what she does. And
thank you.
Yeah, easy. It's easy.
That's cool. And I wasn't saying that it wasn't A plus moments there, just so you make sure that, you know, I'm saying that. I just meant from him being involved as then you now acting, and how he would kind of, if there was different type of tension there with that course correcting or changing, or how you guys worked in unity. But it sounds like you did.
I'm sorry. He would not back off of getting what he wanted from any of us, whether I'm his wife or somebody he just met. You know what I mean? He wants what he wants, and but he's really good because he was an actor for a lot of years. He likes actors to have their process, so he's very generous that way on the set. Where unless there's something that's really just not going well, then he, you know. But it's all in the casting too. Casting the right people for the parts, and that decision early on makes his job easier.
I think that was learned also with Francis Coppola. One particular little story was during the filming of The Outsiders. It was the big fight scene, you know, with the rain and everything. And we were doing it for 5 days in the rain every night. But Francis would let you, you know, improvise, come up with stuff. And I told him, I said, okay, so Tim Shepard's this guy that, you know, is joining up, that, you know, these guys really respect him. He's, you know, kind of a badass. I said, what about when I'm like fighting, I go down and I like bite this guy's ear and bite, you know, take a chunk out, you know? And he goes, yeah. So they got makeup and they put this little piece on this guy, and
whoa.
You know, my close up, I'm banging his head, and I reach down, and nobody sees it, but he let me do it.
That's all. That's great.
Yeah. So you.
That's where Mike Tyson got inspired back in the day.
You allow the actors to bring whatever you can, because you never know what you're going to be able to use. And but Francis really had, you had so much leeway with Francis. And when you're exposed to that over a period of time, of years. Seeing him, his process of working, you know, yeah, I'm gonna do what he does. He's like the master.
I love it. And how did you, so another question I had from doing this from the ground up, as far as fully producing it now, the whole investor part, I'm sure that added, I guess adventures would be a word to say it, but I mean, I know it's probably really stressful and kind of, how do you go? I'm personally curious from doing different businesses, but never the movie business. How do you kind of go about like looking for investors and stuff in a film?
Well, you know, there's a lot of legal work, and that's why it really helps now that our daughter is a lawyer, you know, that was all part of our master plan.
Right. I think I saw that on Yellowstone now.
Yeah, that paid off. So I think the process is like everything else for me anyway in my life. It's always been hard. You always have, with wrestling, you have to persevere. You've got to, you know, go for that A+. And it's the same way with investors. I mean, once you get all your legal work in, you know, everybody's going to be a partner in the film, you know, company that you've set up. You just have to knock on a lot of doors and get a lot of no's. That's what I tell Ivy in life. You grab as many no's as you can. And I heard that somewhere and I go, that's so true, man. You have to be turned down so many times. So when you get that yes, you really appreciate it. And with that, you want to make sure that you really take care of your investors. You know, that it's very important that we get their money back and with their percentages. That's more important to me almost than anything right now, because if you don't have that, they're not going to want to get in, you know, jump in, you know, in another project with you. But you don't want to leave that on the table, because there's so many stories out there that people don't make their money and they don't do that and they don't get their money back and they lost money. But when we set out to write this, we set out to write where we could hit this niche market and this niche market and create something that we go, okay, we have something now that could be commercial and it could resonate with a lot of people and subsequently get our money back for our investors. So that's that process. You follow every single lead. I followed every single lead. And that led me to person. That led me to a person.
But don't you think that, like, at one point, we really felt like this movie was being taken care of? And once those doors, once the doors started opening, they just opened. Like, it was kind of...
Absolutely.
Kind of like humbling.
But it's still arduous. It's still arduous to go out there and ask somebody to, you know, it's hard getting somebody to reach in their pocket for a buck. You know, hey, can you lend me a dollar to, I really don't have it. And
to ask for it too. Yeah. To be on the end of, hey, will you invest in this and take a risk? And
But it always comes down to relationships. And I think if they believe in you, then they're willing to take a chance to say, yeah, you know, it's as interesting to me. Let's try this. And then they remind me, if this doesn't work, no, but our investors are wonderful.
They're going to have Cole come back and he's going to take you to the train station or whatever. So I've been watching Yellowstone too much. People listen, like, what is he talking about?
Think of that cliff, right? Maybe you haven't gotten that part.
It's like the Godfather of the West.
It is.
Really good. Kevin Costner's wonderful. That whole cast is fantastic.
He looks the same. I'm like, he looks the same from Field of Dreams. Kevin Costner.
Yeah, he's looking just a wonderful film.
I love him in that character too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So something that I want to ask both of you and with talking about, if there's time and you can each maybe share something, but so does your whole family, like, you believe in God? Were you all like raised like that? Or did you come to something like that later on? Or
I believe in God and I do it, you know, I say my prayers every night. But I don't judge if somebody is or isn't. I also studied TM for a while, and I've always explored it. I don't make a big deal of it.
Sure.
But I think for me personally, you have to have something out there you got to talk to somebody.
I agree.
Allie doesn't want to hear it all the time.
So where do you guys differ on that?
Oh, I think it just is our upbringing. Like, I was raised with nothing. Like, no, like, my parents definitely wanted me to find it on my own. Like, they didn't force anything. The golden rule was what was taught in my
home. Right.
And so I came to my own, like, thing later. I think, like, after my daughter was born, just sort of searching and I keep it kind of personal, so I don't like to
share. I got any.
I'm comfortable telling the story, if that tells you anything. And I think that having to come to it without having it be forced on me,
right,
was something I'm grateful for that. I feel like it resonates more now. It feels like I'm not reciting something or you know what I mean?
Right. It's 100%.
Yeah.
I think it's right now, you know, with everything that's going on, and I'm the same way. I mean, I believe in God. I'm a Christian, but I speak and stuff all over. I don't preach down people's throats, but I am just like, here's what I went through. And here, like, I mean, my wife is from Sierra Leone, West Africa, originally was raised Muslim. Could do a whole other show on that, but how we've come together in so many different ways, like organically through that. And I just know personally, and something that I love about The Last Champion too, is when you're in these huge struggles and life just like punches you in the face, because adversity comes, is of course you both know, no matter what, at different times, without having, like, for me, like, God to be able to talk to and just like cry to and stuff, that's what makes me, I don't know what people that don't have something like that. So it's not to me in a way of like wanting to preach. It's more like, I just wish they had something, because I know what it was like to not have that. And then I know what it's like to be able to have that kind of like weight lifted off of you.
Yeah. And I think that's, and kind of echoing what Hallie said, it's also personal. And it was very important for us that we don't, you know, I'm not going to preach to anybody. I know what works for me, and I know what helps me sort of calm myself, but we definitely didn't want that in the film like that. We wanted to portray it exactly the way it is. Some guys, you know, hitting and wanting to go in there and eventually unload.
And in that part of the country, and we wanted the movie. Sorry, were you finished? I didn't mean to step on you. In that.
I need a little cut, a little thing in between you two.
Okay, so.
No, it's fine. It's not a preachy. We didn't want it to be, you know. I want it to be drama. I want it to be.
Right. No, it was real. It was off the movie. I wouldn't even label it.
It's not like a preachy kind of thing. It's sort of like, I compared it to like when Rudy goes and speaks to the priest at the school when he can't, you know, when he can't get on the team. You know, we really wanted it that way. And I think we got that.
Yeah. And on that campus, at that school, that's who you would go to speak to.
Yeah.
Sure.
And in this town, in this small little community, which is got a heavily Christian population, and he actually had a history with the pastor being the father of his old girlfriend. It's an organic move to speak to him. you know, especially because he's already reached out to him, right, and been rejected. So I think we wanted it to just come naturally out of the story without having to lace. I cannot watch those movies where they just seem so unreal to me. Anyone who I know who has shared a story about being witnessed to, I mean, it's just, they don't seem real to me. And that's what, if it's not real, then the audience isn't going to get swept up into the film and be moved by it. They'll be more distant. They'll be watching like, oh yeah, you know, that's nice. Instead of having an experience. And I think we really wanted people to have an experience watching the movie.
I know I did. I mean, you're saying that, and I was just clicked in my head. I was thinking of when he's drinking, and I mean, again, I don't want to give stuff away for people that have seen it, but how you just made that scene real of him being up all night and stuff, and the daughter and the pastor like finding him, and how that, I wouldn't be labeling it as anything. And I know I haven't been involved in Hollywood as much as both of you have, and I know how sometimes people can get weird about that stuff, but I'm just honestly about having a real conversation. And like you kept, like, perseverance, you were saying, and authenticity, I think are like key words in all of our lives, and something that movie really, and hope, like, shined a light on. And it's just such a, like, what more time right now, you know, do we need those things? It's like perseverance for both of you. And Hallie, if you have a second before we need to go, do you mind if, can you share, like, speaking of perseverance, you mentioned, like, from your upbringing, getting some of those no's and what you kind of had to go through to get into being an actor more and more, like some of those bigger struggles, I guess, to people that are out there getting told some no's in their younger years?
Yeah, you know, I have a weird kind of story, and that is that I was raised in the industry. My mother, Ann Gilbert, was a pretty successful character actress, and my father was a prominent writer-producer in Los Angeles. Not like crazy, like Aaron Spelling level kind of, you know, on that level, just normal kind of people working in the industry, but I was raised around it. So I used to go with my, so I had an awareness and an exposure that worked to my advantage. And I got working early on without having to bust through a lot of doors, because I had connections that were just part of my extensions of my family's life. Right.
Right.
But I definitely had to, like, my father, he was producing something that he thought I would be right for. And one time I came in and I got the part, and another time I came in and, oh, this is nice. The scene was a girl, very drunk and like falling down drunk, sloppy drunk, having to beg this guy that she had this crush on to have sex with her. And he's like in the middle of rejecting her, and then she vomits on him. Okay. So that was the audition scene.
Wow.
I had to do that in front of my dad and all the other people. And then I didn't get the part. So he was not like, oh, here's my daughter, give her the part. That was like, yeah, thanks, Dad, for putting me through that humiliation. But anyway, so.
But do you respect, just sorry, like now as you're older, do you you understand like the principle that I always think of that as a parent too, like with my company, I'm like, if I'm not letting my kids take it over, they're going to come work in their butt off from the ground up and yeah. prove and yeah. earn their way. And in the moment, they might be like, Dad, why didn't you give me that role? It's you. You could have made that decision. But he's like, no, I want you to earn it, you know?
Yeah.
Were you like, yeah. did that click later on, or were you like, come on, Dad?
No, Ivy has been, oh, for me. Yeah. I also went on my mom used to do, for a while, she was doing a lot of commercials. I used to go on the auditions with her. I used to go to the unemployment office with her. So mm-hmm. I knew the life of a working actor growing up. I mean, it wasn't a shock to my system getting rejected and not getting jobs, you know, and having to just kind of, you know, hoof it until you get those doors open for you. And interestingly, in my career, I got a lot of doors open to me early on, and then had to go through that period where things weren't happening. So, so it was interesting. But I have that memory of her struggling, you know, and you just have to show up and do it. And keep, you know, not wear it too, keep it thick skin.
That's exactly just show up and do it is pretty much a great mentality that everyone needs to understand and listen. And you can complain all you want, and there's stuff that happens that sucks, and we are victims of things. But that's what I always say is, if complaining worked, like, go for it, but it doesn't. So the world really doesn't care. You still have, the key is show up and just keep going one step at a time.
Right. One step at a time, one day at a time.
So to everyone listening, I'm going to be, I'm working very, very hard to get this. So when everyone's going to be listening, it should be December 8th. And tomorrow, the movie will be officially The Last Champion to purchase. So I have the iTunes link. Everyone listening, it's going to be in the show notes. Go ahead.
It's going to be on iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. Initially starting, and then we'll move into the other platforms.
Isn't that, I'm sure you get more used to that, but isn't that so, that still has to be kind of surreal, how it's like, not, you probably had a whole plan for the theater launch and stuff, and...
Yeah, but
I think it's where it's supposed to be now. I think it worked out exactly where it's supposed to be, and I think it's a good film that people will be able to watch with the whole family over the holidays, and hopefully can, you know, engage people in conversations other than, you know, the political stuff.
You can buy the movie for cheaper than two movie tickets, and you can own it. So in some ways it's kind of cool. Yeah. I'll personally be purchasing it. And hey, everyone listen, I'm not an investor in this. Like, I'm saying it, but it was good. I wouldn't recommend stuff to the listeners. It's not, so it was a damn good movie.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank both of you. It's been an honor. And, yes. And anything else, anywhere else for people to reach you, or main thing is check the movie out right now, huh?
Yeah. Check the movie out. It goes on, on all the platforms today. You can buy it for $19.99 or tomorrow.
December 8th. It should be airing. Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. but you're gonna be able to rent it also for, $6.99. So we're making it available to everybody, you know, at that price. So that was a choice that, as our company, we made. I mean, we could have probably gotten more, but $6.99 can get everybody to see it.
Does it show, man, I'm so from my books. Does it show you like on the, so do you get a thing with it directly on there? Does it show you how many people purchase the movie, like on a, are you able to track that on like a daily rate or anything? Or is it like every month?
We're setting that up right now with our aggregator. So we're going to be able to see it. I think one of our consultants that we're working with right now, he's able to look at it now, but we're getting all that. Yeah, it's all technical, getting all that stuff. Right. So we can start following.
I'm just curious.
The messaging, we can do that too, to make sure that we're putting the right pieces out there to, you know, get people to click on it and all that.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. And on, so on social media, anywhere, I'll have the link. Glenn, are you on social media? I know you, I'll have the link though for everyone else that is to connect.
He's not really, I'm on Instagram at Hallie Todd.
Yeah,
the movie is The Last Champion Film on Instagram, and on Facebook, Last Champion on Facebook.
Okay, awesome. Well, listen, everyone, it couldn't be a better time. You kind of mentioned it. The person upstairs, whatever you believe in, is orchestrating, and the fact that the movie The Last Champion is coming out right now on December 8th to really end what has been one of the most challenging in so many different ways years to people out there feeling like they're losing hope. And this is just, I couldn't think of something better that you can be just sitting with your family by yourself and finishing the year out with some hope and just knowing to keep going. And I don't want to give anything away, but everyone, God is orchestrating, never settle, never give up, and keep elevating beyond.